This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Joining us in this hour, Mark Hamrick, as he does every week, senior analyst, bankrate.com. The December jobless numbers have been out for a couple of days. Everyone's had the opportunity to digest them. Mark, welcome, and what do they reveal?
Good to be with you, my friend. I can't believe we made it into Tuesday, almost the second, well, it is the second week of January in 2022. And yeah, a little bit of indigestion on that December jobs report, simply because consistent with the pandemic, it sort of dished up a number of surprises. And really, it was the second straight month where that was the case, where we really had, you know, kind of the equivalent of a head-on collision between the two sets of data that are generated between a household survey that gives us the unemployment rate and the establishment or business survey that gives us the number of jobs added. And so the collision was the number of jobs added, at least in the month of December, came in below expectations, even below the previous month. By the time you add in revisions, it ended up being not quite so negative, but you end up with essentially 340,000 jobs being added between the revisions and December that you didn't have before, 199,000 for December alone. And then that unemployment rate gets, you know, ever closer to the pre-pandemic low, which was 3.5%. We're now at 3.9%. So I guess we shouldn't be surprised that narratives could be a little confusing in this day and age. But, you know, we'd love it if more of this data would align more consistently. But, you know, earlier in the week, we had had the ADP report that told us there were 800,000 jobs added on the month. That's a private payroll survey. We've had other indications from the Labor Department on a near record number of job openings, the record number of people leaving their jobs. So I don't think that that report last Friday does anything to dissuade us from the notion that the job market is tight, but it's tight within the context of strange things happening with the pandemic and, of course, the Omicron variant.
Mark, we continue to get a lot of texts asking, when we're comparing these numbers, what is the actual baseline? So are we looking back to the number of jobs available previous to the pandemic or just year over year?
Well, I mean, I think we can do all of that. I think one of the things that we want to see, for example, is recovering all the jobs that were lost during the pandemic. And I think we're still 3.6 million away from that. And then the fact of the matter is, as time has marched on, even though in some ways it seems to have stood still, that we probably would have averaged, you know, during normal times, 250,000 jobs a month in any case. And so at that point, you're starting to look at something along the lines of another 5 million jobs. So we're still digging out of a hole. But the question is, do we have anything to dig with? Because if we don't have people in the labor force, if we don't have sufficient legal immigration to accomplish those employment goals, I'm afraid that we're going to continue to be telling this story about how employers are looking around going, where are all the workers? And obviously the pandemic doesn't help us with that. But the fact that wages have risen, not rising enough to keep pace with inflation, but they have risen above a pace that we saw before the pandemic, that is impressive. Many households do have more cash on hand than they had before. But we know that there are, you know, income and wealth variations or, you know, issues that are where they're not everybody's keeping pace with their neighbor, so to speak. That's always going to be the case in our economy. Maybe it's less so now because the economy has been growing, the job market's improving. And just this morning, for example, Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell's on Capitol Hill for his confirmation hearing, obviously renominated or nominated for a second term. And he's talking about the fact that he's been questioned about it is, you know, can we sort of have a rising tide in the economy that lifts more boats, knowing that there are differences among different groups when it comes to unemployment, persons of color, et cetera, who don't enjoy the same lower unemployment rate that that others do.
So, and I read that in the report that, you know, for minorities that the unemployment rate is higher. That's an outcome. Do we know the why?
I think there are a lot of different reasons. I think one is the fact that differences in education, there are some structural issues that are out there that some would point to being essentially structural racism. I don't think you can say that that issue has been resolved in our society yet, but ultimately it is that we need to better educate and prepare people for the workforce, and a lot of those things have been disrupted during the pandemic. You have trade schools that haven't been functioning. You have in-person learning that basically hasn't certainly occurred as consistently as it was during the pandemic, and that's a hindrance for employers who need well-qualified candidates. And that applies across the board. So, unfortunately, we'll never have that sort of Orwellian situation in our society where everybody is made equal. That just is impossible. And we know the political systems that try to achieve that and fail mightily. But we can still strive for that within a democracy and a republic. And I think those are laudable goals.
Black workers rose to 7.1% unemployment, 3.2% for white workers, and Hispanic employment fell a little bit as well. When we looked at the disproportionate number of jobs as it relates to job growth, has been in hospitality, tourism, and others, more of the low-paying jobs. How does that square up? I went to a drive-through Chinese restaurant yesterday, and they were closed. Omicron's hitting them, and they're not able to staff. But they were closed for a month and a half before that because they couldn't hire anybody.
Right, and then so you look at leisure and hospitality that includes bars and restaurants, and the Labor Department tells us that that sector has added 2.6 million jobs since. Essentially, we've begun recovering from the pandemic, or I should say in 2021, but the employment is still down by 1.2 million since February of 2020 when we sort of began to see the real impacts on the economy from the pandemic and the lockdowns. So I think that this is going to continue to be a struggle. And, there was a great story, I'll just use that as an example, in the Washington Post in the past few days, including some commentary from the CEO of Chipotle, who basically is saying, listen, if we can't accomplish this using human capital, we're going to have to turn more often to technology. And I think that probably is going to end up being part of the solution. You know, I don't think many of us necessarily want to sit down at a fine dining establishment or one that's even sort of in the middle category and think about ordering on an iPad. But listen, you got to get the job done one way or the other. And that may end up being part of the solution in some settings. And the other part, of course, is that employers are doing what they can to improve working conditions, to raise wages. But that only works so far, particularly at a time when you have inflation running at about a 7% annual pace, and many consumers are certainly very price conscious about, how much more you're going to raise prices on me.
Mark, many folks are saying that this most recent report kind of pushes the Fed to do something maybe sooner. What is behind that thought process?
Well, the Federal Reserve has been, in a sense, caught flat-footed by the inflation problem, which has been more significant and more persistent. We talked for months about how officials basically continued to preach from the hymnal of this too shall pass, and it hasn't. And, you know, we just completed our quarterly economic survey for those who, you know, want to do some reading. And we published 4 stories on that at Bankrate.com last week. And obviously one of the important questions there is the persistence of inflation. And for what it's worth, the economists believe that we are either at the point where inflation has peaked or soon will be. I do think that, unfortunately, the pandemic sort of raising its ugly head again here lately is causing supply chain disruptions again. It's not a question of whether there's sufficient demand. The question is whether there's sufficient supply. And the economists believe that the worst of the pricing shock, if you want to put it that way, will be behind us by the time we get to the second half of the year. But that's a long time. And we have plenty of data to suggest that consumers are having to cut back on other things. And it's the number one impact, essentially, at least from an economic perspective, that's dampening consumer sentiment or consumer confidence. So, and you know, I can't escape the fact that I work and live around the Washington, D.C. area. And with each month that I'm tearing off another month that's passed with the calendar, and, you know, please don't curse me for saying this, but we're getting ever closer to the midterm elections. And well, one way or the other, the political narrative is going to get noisier.
Been receiving a number of texts as well from folks that are asking, is there a differential of the impact that where we find ourselves now, just specifically relative to this jobs report? Who bears the brunt more, small business, large business?
I think, obviously, small business has less flexibility, less access to capital markets, you know, less access to borrowing, and less flexibility in the resources that they have on hand with respect to personnel. And I will say that in the ADP report that we saw last week, which, you know, breaks it down between small, medium, and large businesses in terms of those that are adding workers, it was pretty well dispersed in that. But, you know, I think that all of us know examples of small businesses that have closed during this time. We just had a heartbreaking development in our neighborhood here in suburban Maryland, where one of our most beloved Italian restaurants basically threw in the towel after 17 years. And, you know, they don't have the access to borrowing that the large chains do, or maybe they didn't take advantage of the PPP program that gave many of these companies a lifeline. So, you know, it kind of should go without saying that one of the reasons why we need vibrant small businesses is because we need innovation. We need the future large businesses to be sort of percolating out there in the economy and coming up with the next great concept, whether it is a restaurant or whether it's something that's in technology or something in between. And when those kinds of enterprises are suffering for whatever reasons, whether it's regulation, too much in taxes, which can obviously be a local factor, whether it's a state or locality, or even on the federal level, if they're struggling, then ultimately that's holding behind the innovation and recovery in the U.S. economy.
I've read that there's legitimate concern for folks relative to, especially in the small business world, let's just use restaurants as an example, wage pressures, inflation, food price. Many of those feel like they may be pricing themselves out of the market. They don't have anywhere to turn, that we could be facing a spring of a lot of closures.
Well, I mean, I don't think you can totally discount that, but the one thing that has been consistent for the past, I don't know, 6 to 9 months has been an almost shockingly low number of job cuts, and that's seen in the weekly jobless claims numbers that we see. That has remained near the lowest levels in 50 years. And so, obviously, during the normal course of the way that an economy unfolds, some of those things can happen beneath the surface, and they don't necessarily present themselves in the wholesale or, you know, broad-based economic data. But I think the other part is that many consumers, let's just assume that, you know, I'm going to pray that we're able to put the worst of this pandemic behind us in the next, I don't know, 4 to 6 weeks. I know it's important for tourism around your neck of the woods as well. If indeed that occurs, I think many consumers are going to continue to be eager to take advantage of situations where they can get out of their own house. And, you know, we've been talking about that really since we first started thinking about the implications of the pandemic and working and staying at home what feels like too long. So I think the demand is going to continue to be there. Obviously, it's a struggle on the pricing front, but I would say also that entrepreneurs and businesses in general are very good at adapting. And it may be, as they did around here in Maryland in recent months, that essentially they, you know, move away from serving crabs because crabs had gotten way too expensive coming out of the Chesapeake Bay. And, you know, people went to shrimp, just to use kind of a simple example. And now, sure enough, the price of our beloved blue crabs around Maryland has come back down, and people are sort of wading back in and buying those things again. And I think you'll see that across the board. People are very adept at substituting. And for those who have the deep pockets or are not as concerned, they'll go ahead and pay. And that's probably going to be one of the kind of conflicting aspects of the economy, where growth is relatively strong, the job market's strong, but there are still going to be people who are left behind.
Excuse me. I, like you, fall more on I feel better about where we're going to be in the spring. But there is that strain of angst and anxiety that's running there, where folks are very nervous.
Completely understandable, you know, and, you know, I think the two of us, without casting aspersions on you there, my friend, I think the two of us are old enough to remember the impact of inflation.
It is my birthday today, Mark.
Oh, my gracious. What a coincidence. Well, happy birthday. The good Lord must.
So there is another year. There's another year added to that age.
Well, God bless you and many more to come. And so whatever that number is, you know, I think we have seen enough over the years to remember that the experience of the 1970s with inflation was quite miserable. And this is one reason why Jerome Powell is basically saying, hey, we've got this. If we need to raise interest rates more than is expected, we will do that, because, you know, it's one thing to talk about a recession, but inflation can be every bit as damaging as a recession on the economy, because it ends up being, you know, kind of a sledgehammer of a tax, and that's where we've been over the last year. And and that's why I think it is kind of a universal condition for many consumers, is they are quite fed up with inflation, didn't see it coming, probably none of us really did. I didn't see the causes of it coming per se, and hope that we can be done with it sooner rather than later.
Yeah, the only thing that kind of dampens my optimism is the most recent articles that I've read about this supply chain disruption. Some folks are saying it could get worse before it gets better, and a lot of issues that are going on in China right now are going to be, you know, determinative of where this thing goes, and that could be a problem. That's something that we might not be able to get our hands around.
I think you're absolutely right, and I don't think there's any question that there will be certain aspects of it that will persist. They already have longer than expected, and if indeed it's sort of more broad-based, and that's going to be more problems for the economy. I mean, around here in the Mid-Atlantic right now, many grocery shelves are depleted simply because we've had two winter storms in a row, and people are sort of like, where can I get lettuce? And between that and climate change, you have that with the tropical storm season in your neck of the woods as well. It feels like we just can't catch a break. And, you know, for all those reasons, I think consumers are looking for reasons to feel better about things, but between the pandemic and the way the economy has proceeded with inflation, the negative impacts of inflation have really kind of outweighed the positive impacts of improvement in the job market, at least when you look at the consumer sentiment surveys, which is pretty astounding when you think about an unemployment rate that has been close to 4% and now just moved below 4% in the latest reading.
You know, it must say something about us down south. You guys, a storm comes, y'all buy lettuce. We buy toilet paper.
Well,
and I'll just leave it at that, Mark.
That's very well said, my friend. Well, happy birthday. What a pleasure to know that and to be able to continue to enjoy this opportunity with you on the air. Thanks so much, Noel.
Thank you so much for joining us. As always, we appreciate your time and your insight. Mark Hamrick, senior analyst, bankrate.com. We will be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Open Heart Jewelers talk and text line. We want to hear from you. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.
I don't know about you, but I truly enjoy my conversations with Mark Hamrick from Bankrate.com and trying to decipher what these reports mean. Obviously, the complexion of the economy changes significantly once we can get our hands around this COVID-19 pandemic that we're dealing with right now. A lot of chatter out there about when does it become an endemic. Is the presence of the Omicron variant a good indication because of the virulence of same that we might be close to an end? Toe in the water. Is it indicative of this making its transition from a pandemic to an endemic at this point in time? I don't know about you, but I certainly hope so. I think a lot of folks are growing weary of having to deal with this. And the information, the one thing that has surprised me, and I would love to hear from you, 504-260-1870 on the Open Heart Jewelers Talk and text line on this issue. I thought that I would be more comfortable in what I thought I knew about COVID at this juncture as we enter year three of dealing with it, as opposed to a lot of the confusing and mixed messaging that's going on right now. And the embracing of an ideology at all cost and willing to say anything in support of same, we witnessed that with Justice Sonia Sotomayor the other day, where she was so factually off the rails in order to make a point in advancing whatever ideology she's embracing. A lot of these questions just didn't seem pertinent to the legal issue before the court. But there are a lot of lawyers a hell of a lot smarter than me. But it just is a little confusing at this point in time. And as we see the prevalence of breakthrough cases, one has to wonder. And now the messaging is shifting that, you know, the vaccine was never about eradicating COVID, which that kind of runs contrary to what we've been hearing from one side of the aisle as opposed to the other, that it's now all about severity of the illness, whether or not you will have to be hospitalized. Then you overlay that with a lot of the data that's coming out about deaths in this country associated with individuals who have had at least not one, not two, not three, but four other comorbidities. And now there's some information to indicate that deaths with COVID as opposed to a result of COVID could be a game changer in the manner in which we evaluate this data. Now, I have been one that has repeatedly said that you have to make the decision for yourself. Educate yourself about it, and I still hold true to that. And even though that I sit here and admit that I'm a little bit more confused and a tad bit cynical of some of what I'm hearing, there is a bright line for me. And a lot of people don't actually like the new CDC director, Rochelle Walensky. I hear a lot of criticism. But one thing that I find somewhat refreshing is that a lot of this confusion is actually caused by her. And a lot of it, I think, is because she's actually been more transparent and willing to say a few more things than otherwise. Now, why she would kind of stiffen her upper lip, so to speak, when it came to criticism of a Supreme Court justice who is just factually wrong is beyond me. Obviously, somebody told her something. Why not just set the record straight? You're wrong. There are not 100,000 kids in hospitals as we speak in dire straits as a result of COVID. There are not the significant numbers you refer to on ventilators. Now, in pieces and parts, as you put all of this together, they have been addressed. But why we would not just come right out and address that situation and set the record straight? Whether you're right-leaning, left-leaning, or otherwise, the Supreme Court justice has credibility. People will tend to believe her because people don't want to believe that a Supreme Court justice would sit up there and just make things up, that they would do their homework, that they have a staff, they would research these items before they started quoting what are professed to be facts. At the end of the day, for me, after all of this is pulled together, I find it to be a little confusing. And I've spent as much time as most folks reading and educating myself about these issues, spending time with Dr. Jill Cantor and others from LCMC and Children's Hospital talking about this over and over and over again. It's one of the things that I really like about Dr. Joe Cantor is that from the very beginning, he has said that the messaging out of the CDC and the FDA has been lacking. And a lot of it is caused confusion amongst the public. And when the public is confused, they're not going to be as receptive to listening to folks. You got to manage and massage the public's trust very carefully. You've heard me say that over and over and over again, because you got to work three times as hard to get it back if you lose it. And unfortunately, as it relates to this pandemic, as it relates to vaccines, as it relates to therapeutics, as it relates to any number of issues, so many of the folks in the public health arena and the political circles and otherwise have absolutely, the public has no confidence in them, and they've lost it. And I'm not sure that a number of those, including Dr. Fauci, has been able to get it back. If you're going to serve one master, the master has to be the science, not the president, not the head of the FDA, not the head of the CDC. We'd love to hear from you, 504-260-1870. We'll come back right after the break. Stay with us. And it didn't stop with Justice Sonia Sotomayor. Justice Stephen Breyer suggested that if mandatory vaccinations went forward, they would prevent all new COVID infections. 750,000 new cases every day, he said. Somebody just needs to direct members of the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, to the CDC website It's one Google search, two button presses, and you're there, and you're going to find evidence that is being provided by the CDC, which is pretty much the guiding light of what we do here in this country, to find otherwise. These are the indications that I'm talking about when we're stuck on an ideology and we're trying to bootstrap things into the law because of what we want to believe in. And this is unhealthy. Now, recall that I have been in favor of mandatory vaccinations in very limited situations prior to Omicron. But with Omicron now, in the manner in which it presents itself, with over 50 mutations known to evade a lot of antibody protection, and 30 of those mutations are to the spike protein alone, which has been used by the immunogen of the existing vaccines that we have on the market today. And we talked about that extensively with Dr. Joe Cantor. This is different. So when we adopt these policies for the challenge that we have at hand, do these policies carry through the entire pandemic? And I don't think that we are ignorant if we question this, because the Omicron variant has really perplexed folks, and there's a lot of information out there that is yet to be resolved. Now, we're a little bit behind the eight ball because a lot of other countries are already using other therapeutics that we continue to use that we have recently found out don't work with Omicron. And so and they have moved on to others because they are more advanced in their testing and tracing and being able to evaluate much smaller populations, but nonetheless a more robust response to this. So I think it's legitimate questions. And it just goes to the uncertainty of this. It doesn't mean one group of folks is smarter than the others or otherwise, and it doesn't have to be combative, and it doesn't have to be a debate. But we just can't hold on to a premise in perpetuity through the pandemic when there's scientific evidence that may suggest otherwise. And as we are now embarking upon this test-buying frenzy that we're having to conduct tests at home, we have really begun to minimize our ability to evaluate, test, and trace. There are some that say that maybe that's not nearly as valuable as it once was. There are some in the medical fields that are saying this isn't a question of if, this is a question of when you get Omicron. And now there's a resurgence looking as to whether or not there should be some validation of natural immunity. Other countries are there. Other countries are using a number of medications as to therapeutics that refuse to use in this country based on their research. Now, I don't know the validity of the research. I just bring this up to make the point that if we are the biggest and strongest and most forward-leaning country in the world, why are we not out in front of this? Why are we not telling other countries what to expect? Why are we not more focused on the science? Step out of the political atmosphere, out of the political realm, out of the political circle, and focus on one thing, the science. And the sooner we get to there, the better off we'll be. We'll be right back. Stay with us, folks. This is Newell on WWO. And then, you know, folks, there are those that are so clued into the science, they just can't help themselves. In fact, there was one little itty-bitty study that indicated that Viagra might be a good therapeutic for COVID-19. Yes, Ian, you heard me correctly. That is true. And there's now been a run on Viagra. So maybe things are changing. Folks are going to pay attention to these studies, to the science. And then again, maybe not. Not sure where this is all going. But we know where we're going next hour. We're going to visit with Hans von Spakovsky, Senior Legal Fellow in the Heritage Foundation's Edwin Meese III Center for Legal and Judicial Studies. We're going to talk about what Democrats have resorted to in their push to pass federal legislation relative to elections in this country. Remember, each of the individual states and the territories get to pass their own election laws. Not any longer. There's a desire to consolidate all of that, and we'll talk about what they're trying to do with this bill. To me, it seems as though the provisions they like, they leave those untouched. The ones they don't is the one that they become most definitive about. We'll be right back.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.